Hey everybody, before today's episode, I want to let you know that VCon is quickly coming here, May 18th to the 20th in Indianapolis. Go to vcon.co, vcon.co for details. You will not want to miss it.
Let's talk about with knowing who you are, auditing yourself, and the importance of leveraging your strengths, not just for being an entrepreneur, but for having a good shot at life.
Look, I mean, I think you went right to the jugular. I think one of the biggest reasons so many people fail in whatever, you know, endeavor they're on is a lack of self-awareness, because we as human beings have insecurities and we posture and we position. And I mean, there was a business deal I worked on today that is not going to happen because the gentleman values his title from his old company, which is a really tiny failing company, but the clout of that title is going to make him hold on and sink with that ship versus the other opportunities he has where he would have actually learned how to become that title. And I'm empathetic to it. I'm not even mad. This is no judgment. This is human behavior. A lot of us in this room, I've gone through, there's just things that I mean, I wish I was the quarterback of the New York Jets, but with sports, it shows you very quickly if you are or you aren't. With entrepreneurship and other things in life, you just get the title and you say you are, and a lot of other people believe you, or you believe you're tricking other people. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you don't know yourself, you've got really no shot, because it's too hard, right? It's too hard. And really, I think what's even more interesting for me personally about it is people are posturing. You know, they just genuinely want people to think of them in a certain way. And people are going into things for quote unquote the wrong reasons, because they're looking for a short-term fix to something that's bothering them. And so, you know, going even more tactical, when you might be a good, back to entrepreneurship, you might be a good entrepreneur, but if you don't realize that you're not a good operator, and then you hire a COO, or if you don't realize that you're good at sales, but that may not mean you're a good entrepreneur, or that you're a good entrepreneur, but you hate selling and you have to get a partner or a capable teammate that can sell their ass off. Like, these are just like cliche things that, you know, kids, one day you're going to have the gray hairs. And one of the things that is good about it is you've seen shit, right? You've lived it. Right now you're reading it, you know? And so when you live it, it becomes even more real. And, you know, I appreciate the first question because I think it's monstrous. Lack of self-awareness destroys people, destroys them.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for being here. What are some of the things that you sacrificed to get where you are today? And do you think it's possible to reach a high level of business success without immense sacrifice?
Of course, it's a possibility if you decide to define business success at a certain level. I would argue that a business that's living and breathing, that is alive and growing, that makes the founder $800,000 a year, is an outrageously successful business. The top 1% earners in America make $480,000 a year. You're a top 1% success, and at $800,000 a year take home from a small business, one does not have to sacrifice in the way that the question was posed, right? At that level, you don't have to work 19 hours a day. You can have 60-hour work weeks, 45-hour work weeks, achieve that level of financial success, and still have family time and still have your mental health. I mean, I don't think mental health has a number. I know people that are struggling with mental health that have businesses that do $40,000 a year. And I know people that do not have mental health issues and have good, you know, content, happy peace of mind that run $300 million a year businesses. So I don't think mental health has a direct attribute with size and scale. I think it goes back a little bit to self-esteem, self-awareness. I also think by show of hands, because I see most of you, how many of you in this class intuitively believe like doing business or being an entrepreneur is as fun to you as like playing sports or watching TV or skiing or like it's like the most fun? Raise your hand. Right. So like, you know, for me, that group is going to struggle to burn out if their literal favorite thing on earth and their hobby and their fun is business building? Of course there's sacrifices, but I don't know if you know this. There's a lot of people in this classroom, professor, I don't know if you know this. There's a lot of people you and I know who do not own businesses, who are employees, who sacrifice things too. Sacrifice is just a reality of life. But you get to decide what success is, right? Like, what's success? $1 million? $10 million? $100 million? $1 trillion? Like, you know, to me, why I love entrepreneurship, for me, success is being able to do what you want to do every day and living within the means of how much money you have. So if you don't have tons and tons and tons of money, then you can fly private everywhere anytime you want. But having the freedom to create and do your fucking thing, well, that doesn't take that much money. So, you know, I think this is a very complex question. I think a lot of kids are, and a lot of grownups are confused by this. I don't think you have to be unhappy, like, you know, to like win, you know, like I think you can build an empire on your terms and in your way. I also think people lack patience. I think people want money too fast. I think that hurts them. I think that's where, I think people burn out or sacrifice because they're trying to win too fast to show everybody that they won.
You defining success, Gary, it's not just in financial terms. It's in freedom and lifestyle and all those other things. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, I remember one of your first things is better have a stomach for it.
Listen, it's hard. It's lonely. It's like, so I'm petrified of people thinking entrepreneurship is cool and like just doing it because they think it's cool. It's fucking hard.
Well, I don't want to, we romanticize it because we bring in so many successful people, but everywhere you, anywhere there's a business, someone's A, made a really courageous decision, and B, is going through a lot of shit all the time.
For every person you brought to this class, there's 20 million people who tried to do it and failed miserably. You know, it's hard. I think the other thing is, like, you know, how old are you, professor?
Oh, come on. I'm 58.
I'm 47.
And the whole audience just was gasped. They said, it can't be.
So, brother, when you and I were growing up, you know this, and I want you to deliver this because I'm not in the room, and I think in the room it lands even more. When we were growing up, if you made $1 million a year, you were big time. Now, like, if you told the majority of the most ambitious kids in this room that they're only going to make $1 million a year max in their career, they would think like they fucked up.
Oh my God.
And so I think like success got reframed into crazy numbers. Like, you had movies coming out saying, like, Justin Timberlake's, I mean, making a movie 15 years ago that's like, you know, what's better than $1 million? $1 billion. Like, you know, it all got weird. And the separation of wealth and society has gotten weird and too extreme. And so, like, I think people are confused out there.
We got a question sort of related to that. Ryan?
Hi, Gary. So just relating to the concept of failing fast and learning from your past mistakes, how can individuals reframe their perception of failure and use as a tool for growth and progress?
Brother, I think this is where the true entrepreneurship versus manifested or like overcreated entrepreneurship is something I think a lot about. You know, a lot of you were of the generation where failure started to get demonized. Right back to me and Professor being older, like, there was no such thing as any trophy for anybody than besides the people that won Little League. And so we created a culture in the last 30, 40 years where we tried to overprotect people from failure. You know, when I hear that question from you, I get scared, because when I think about the school system, society for the last 30, 40 years, we didn't do a lot of favors for people to get comfortable with losing. We demonized it. By overprotecting people from it, we made them think it was bad, right? So, you know, the answer to the question is you start practice losing, right? Like, here's a good one. There's a lot of people in this class that think other people in this class are cute. They should go out and roll up on them and ask them out. And when they say no, that's good. Like this humans, not Gen Z, not emerging Gen Alpha, not boomers, like humans need to practice losing a lot more. So the answer to the question is it's easy. Go do shit. You'll lose. The question is interesting to me because it's the reality of the game, but many people in this classroom haven't even started playing the game. It's really hard to read about push-ups and get the results. You've got to do the things. And so like losing, like I micro lose every day, but I don't lose at a level of like putting myself out of business. But all that entrepreneurship is micro losing with the occasional macro win. It's really, really the opposite of school. It really is.
Following up on that, Melody, do you have a question about process and outcome?
So thank you for coming in today. My question is, do you see yourself to have more of an outcome-focused approach to your business ventures or more of a process-focused approach? And when it comes to your business ventures, how do you balance the two of them?
I'm 100% process. Melody, I'm like completely and utterly detached from the outcome. The relationship I have with my own business success is super weird even to me, which is I don't think anything I've done professionally actually defines me in any shape or form, and I'm not like attached to it. I'm aware that I've been a successful entrepreneur. I just don't think that means anything. And I know this could get a little weird, so I'm going to try to break it down, but man, I don't know if you could have asked somebody, like people can only tie me on this process versus outcome. I'm that off the reservation on process. I don't need the validation. I don't seek it. I play this game for the game. This goes back to purebred entrepreneurship. So how do I balance it? Pretty damn easy. When you don't give a shit about the second one, you just focus on enjoying the first one.
And for those of us who didn't have a mother who gave us an unbelievable amount of self-esteem and self-confidence, is there a way to work on that?
Because to your point, so much of what I've struggled with in my life is my circumstances. Not everyone's going to be born in the USSR. Not everyone's going to be born into a life where they're not given anything and like they have to figure out how to get things if they want it, like video games. I think the way you build self-esteem is you start surrounding yourself with people that build up your self-esteem, whether they're your friends, your relationships, people on the internet pumping out content. The biggest issue in the world is too many people in the room, too many people on campus, too many people in California, too many people in America, and too many people in the world are consuming negativity and cynicism. Period, end of story. So I think that everybody in this room, if they want to be a little bit more confident and a little bit more happy, need to cut out the 20% of media, social media, and humans that bring that energy and bring in 20% more positivity. People are hanging on to friendships, relationships that they should limit or cut out completely. You should not, if for the people in here who are like, fuck, my dad is super negative and that it's a drain. It's not that you should never talk to your father again. It's if you talk to your father who's negative and cynical and tearing you down subconsciously, and you talk to him 3 times a day, maybe you could talk to him 3 times a week, right? If your boyfriend or girlfriend is a fucking drag, like that's something you need to think about. Like this is real talk, right? Like even like when I said that and seeing some of the people like smile, like this is real shit. Like you need to cut fucking negative people down or out, or it will affect you. It's why everyone's so anxious. Our political leaders have been a drag for a decade. Mainstream media is a drag. Humans are fucking cynical, and humans are very focused on misery loves company, comma. Humans are very optimistic, and humans really want others to win too. You just need to choose those people and those messages to be a bigger percentage of your day-to-day.
Mark Burnett calls them energy drainers. Ben Vandeban, our mutual friend that introduced us, He always says, if you're hanging around with four broke friends, chances are you'll be the fifth. So it really is the people that you surround yourself by. And it's not just about money.
Yeah, but back to that broke one. Everyone knows that broke one. I'm worried that we're not talking about the energy one, because one thing I know about four rich friends, often they're all straight dick faces.
You're right.
My question is, what is the most unconventional strategy you've used to stay focused on your own path and avoid getting distracted by external pressures or comparisons to others? And how did this strategy help you achieve your goals? And would you recommend it to others?
I love that. Oh, this is complicated, Alex. Couple things. Everything that works for me is this crazy balance of wild confidence and deep humility. I think I'm going to be one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time, comma, I don't think that means shit. And so there's this bridge effect that I'm playing with that I would love for people to figure out, but I've been like spending 20 years trying to figure out how to get people to figure it out, right? Like, how do you build, like what we just talked about? My strategy was, if I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks about me, and I mean it, but I equally value what everyone thinks about me, that I could then achieve what I wanted. And what that meant was, I'm empathetic and compassionate to people's judgment on me because it's just a reflection of them, right? On the flip side, I knew that I had to take feedback to get better too. So it's balancing that. But what I basically lived in was my own little cave. And when I didn't like the energy of the person I was dealing with, business, employee, boss, partner, I cut it out, even if it had short-term negative effects for me. So it's really just a perspective on life that I would absolutely recommend to everyone, because I know how much happiness it's brought me and others that I've seen deploy similar strategies. But it's really a challenge to like get into that place of like mental strength. And it's really hard to be like, you know, it's hard for me to, Alex, to look at you right now in the front row and be like, hey, Alex, go get better at humility and confidence. You're like, thanks, Gary. I waited all my life for that dumb shit. What the fuck do I do with that? So it's challenging, but there's a heavy truth in it, Alex. And this is why I think the people thing matters. Like, I really kept good people around me, people that I, you know, care for, who have my best interests in mind. When it becomes obvious to me that they're not on that train, I'm willing to adjust, even if it's painful. And I think that's how you have to think about it.
So you often said that ages 20 to 30 should be a period of high risk and try new things. Some of us here are college seniors following the path into a corporate job. So once you're out of a college setting and working a job, how would you suggest trying to continue to be high risk?
You mean professionally, brother? High risk? Because you could be high risk in your personal life. You could do crazy shit.
Yeah, I was thinking more like professional life.
It's really hard. You know, the reality is, the highest risk thing you can do in a corporate job is to give your opinion, even though you know nobody agrees with it, right? I think the highest risk moves in corporate jobs are pushing back. You know, here you are straight out of school. You're in a meeting with the CEO somehow, some way. She or he says something. You feel like you have expertise and knowledge in it, and you open your mouth and push back. That's risky, because it's all politics in corporate life. Corporate life is not merit, it's politics. And so the highest risk things you can do is share your truth with political risk on the back end of you opening your mouth. Professor, what did you think what did you think there? You thought it was a different thing?
I thought you were more, you know, in terms of the risk of entrepreneurship, of being an entrepreneur, that's where I thought you were gonna go. But you always sort of take it to the personal life side of it and when you take risk. And you know, the one thing that you're going to regret more than anything is not trying to do something. You're going to regret.
I think to your point, I mean, I think it's crazy to me, if you are contemplating entrepreneurship, to take a corporate job at 23 or 24 or 22 or 25. It's crazy. Like, but you know, some people are just, not some people are using this moment to be self-aware and decide they're not entrepreneurs, which is amazing. The number 7 at Amazon is far more financially successful than the number 1 at 8 billion different companies. And so for a lot of people here, when they go through the process of self-awareness, going into a corporate job might not be a bad thing. It may lead them to their biggest financial upside and their biggest happiness because they're doing the role they're supposed to be doing.
And also touch on, Gary, that the different, you know, a lot of people think that when they think of entrepreneurship, they have to be the founder with the idea. And you just sort of touched on it that, you know, the number four person or the number 20 person at Facebook did pretty well and they didn't come up with the idea.
The amount of friends that I tried to join, have joined Uber, Facebook, Snap, trying to think what else, Venmo, TikTok, Musical.ly, who all didn't deploy entrepreneurial spirit, even though they were corporate animals, and they stayed put at the Yahoos or Googles or Facebook instead of going to, you know, like it happens all the time, right? Like taking risk is scary for a lot of people. Here's a trick for a lot of you. I know this is not super cool, but like saving money kind of allows you to take some risks. Like I knew three or four friends who left tens of millions of dollars in stock options on hot companies because they couldn't leave Viacom to go to Facebook because they didn't save any money and they couldn't take the pay cut. And they also were living too bougie. So like they literally lost out on $40 million because they wanted a Mercedes instead of a fucking Toyota.
My question is, what job would best prepare us for entrepreneurship or starting our own venture? I know you mentioned this, that like you start by starting, you go out there, you execute and venture initiation, but like what are the best logical next steps if you haven't found your passion, which is like typically as college students, you know, in commencement speeches, we're always go follow your passion. But you know, a lot of us are here because we haven't found it yet.
Let's stay on this and then I'll answer your question. I think the reason a lot of people haven't found their passion is because they don't think they can make money in their passion. And so they don't admit that it's their passion. Like every one of you has a pretty good sense of the shit you're into. Let's play this game with you. Like, what do you like? Sports, music, like food, like art, like rap? I don't fuck. Like, what do you like?
Well, I guess I just love the idea of just like talking, speaking, public speaking. What do you do basically? And
so then the first job you should do is intern or work for as little as you can afford to for someone who does the thing you want to do.
Yeah. But, I did apply to three VaynerMedia internships this summer, and I did get an interview back, but they ghosted me after. So
let's talk about this for a second. I say this to a lot of kids that get into VaynerMedia that don't get ghosted, and I apologize for that. You know, if you want to be a public speaker, you may need to work at Vayner Speakers or work on my team with my content, because Vayner is detached from me, meaning I'm the active CEO and you'll see me there every day and I'm in it, but you're not going to become a public speaker or in that culture by being in analytics or creative or strategy at Vayner. So I think you need to reframe the request directly to me, which you can email me at Gary at VaynerMedia. And the other 80 people or 40 people that look like me that you're interested in, and try to get as close to the sun that, you know, of what you're interested in. But like, I love that you went there, right? Because it's not logical of like, I want to be a public speaker to be like, oh, I got to go work like right next to Seth Godin or right next to Sarah Blakely or right next to Jesse Itzler. Like, you know, that's something to think about for all of you in this room. If basketball is your favorite thing ever, like you really need to think about being in the business of basketball. Now that doesn't mean being an intern for the Jazz. It may mean that whatever the most emerging, you know, House of Highlights 5 years ago, being the junior person on that team. So like, I think you fight for it in your 20s. Like, I think people know their passion, brother. I really do think they know it. They don't know the logical move of how to make their career about it. Even you had it pretty pegged, but you still went to the company form instead of the human form, which is what would be required for you to really get the osmosis that you're looking for. And that's what I would tell for a lot of people here. I'll give you a big one. This is actually being that we're in LA, something that Hollywood figured out. The whole mailroom and be an assistant thing, that like William Morris and CA did was right. When I look at like all my admins, what they were able to do, like for a lot of people, and this is an answer for the whole class. Like if you want to be a music mogul, like you need to be Scooter Braun's admin. Like, you know what I mean? You need to be like Ryan Seacrest's admin. Like you want to like get, like you need to get as close to the underbelly of the people that are doing the thing. And I think like one of the great misses is that people literally go to business school and like more education in their like early to mid 20s, when I genuinely think becoming the admin of the human you want to be in a 3-year window will get you there faster.
Hello, I'm so excited that you're here today. I've been listening to your podcast and I brought my sister along. We've both been listening for like 5 years, so this is a big moment. But I actually started my own business about 2.5 years ago, and I've been creating content on TikTok and have acquired some followers on there. But I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit about like content creation burnout and getting excited about constantly posting on social media and putting out content.
Burnout happens because people are posting what they think is going to get the most likes and views, instead of what they actually want to post. You know, if you look at like my career, and I think people here have some context, I post weird shit because I might be into the I love the things we're talking about, and I might post that for a week. And then like out of nowhere, I'll post a video of me going to a garage sale and buying something for $1 or me freaking out that the Jets like won a football game, or like, I don't know. I posted about cereal yesterday because I'm very intrigued by people who don't eat cereal that is soggy and they eat their cereal like just cereal. Like I don't understand that. So like I think the burnout comes with when people are posting things they're not passionate about. They're posting things that they think will do well. I saw a ton of burnout from attractive people, right? Like the people that built their audience on like, you know, taking off their shirt and showing their abs or going all, you know, TNA on everything. Like they were burning out because a lot of them got to a different price in their life and they wanted to talk about other shit, but they weren't getting the same action on likes. And they were like literally doing shit they didn't want to do. Like I see a lot of comedians struggle with this. They're saying the same jokes that they know will do well, but their humor has evolved. And so everyone's conforming to what they think will do well versus posting what they want to post. The best way to not burn out is to post what you want to post, even if it doesn't do as well as shit that you used to do. Right? That's why I stopped doing Wine Library TV. I did it every day for 5 years. And then I just didn't want to do it anymore. And the original Gary Vee business content got shit on. Stay in your lane, wine boy. Right? And so I would fight for you talking about the things you want to talk about. And too many people also think it's not a good strategy to talk about a bunch of different shit on their account. And I think it's the reverse.
Hi, Gary. My name is Adam. I just wanted to introduce myself. Big fan for a while.
Thank you, Adam.
So I know you scaled your family's small business and my father also has a small business. What would your best advice be? Because I'm an entrepreneur at heart, literally since I was 12 years old. And I want to know, I've been debating going into it, but I want to know what your best advice would be to scale it and turn it into a $1 billion company.
So I think don't take the word $1 billion company out of there, because I think back to what we talked about earlier, that will create pressure on you that you don't need, right? Every family situation is different. So I can't speak to all the nuances. You know how complicated family businesses are. That's why you're debating it. Let me give you some things that I've learned from being someone who's been out there for a long time. So I've gotten hundreds of thousands of emails and DMs about family business dynamics. There's a couple of things that I think are very real. Number one, it's very unlikely as you get older, and I mean in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 100s, like as you keep getting older and older, that you'll ever regret, you'll always, always not regret doing it. Spending time with your family is something that's, you'll no matter how bad it goes, even if you stop talking, I've read more than a dozen emails from people who stopped talking to their parents because of it and still didn't regret doing it. In hindsight, because in that 5-year window, they got all this, that, you know, like, so one, there's a lot of upside from doing it. Number two, it's very hard. It's very hard. The emotions are going to fly heavy. You're going to come in entitled without even realizing it. He's potentially going to hold on to the past without realizing it. You might both realize it, you might not. It's very complicated. But I think a couple things. One, you have to over-respect that you haven't been there until today. The number one mistake that kids make is they walk into the place as if they've ever done anything. There's so many kids that go into their family business and just their mom and dad had sex at the right second, they think that they're entitled to something. And the reality is they're not, right? That bit, you know, and even for me, even though I worked there every weekend and every summer day since I was 14, when I got there at 22, the best thing I decided was nobody owes me shit. Not my dad, definitely not the employees that have been here. And I was willing to eat shit and grow from the bottom. Too many people graduate USC and they went to entrepreneur class and they want to be a fucking VP. Right? So keep that in mind, that humility will be your superpower, but you must fight for your conviction. If you believe that social media ads will do well and your dad's like, well, we did it this way, you must fight for what you believe at all times and never waver. I never gave my dad an inch. If I gave my dad an inch, we wouldn't have done anything. But I did it respectfully because he fucking built it. And so that's the balance that you have to, your conviction with deep respect, and you have to deploy a ton of patience, and you have to know in the back of your mind that you're young and you can leave at any time. When I left at 34 years, this is back to like defining success. Friends, I want everyone to hear this. This could really help somebody in this room. When I left at 34 for my dad's business, I'd built it from 3 to 75 million in revenue. I was never paid $100,000. I started VaynerMedia out of Buddy Media's conference room in 2009, because I didn't have enough money personally to pay rent for a company. You can accomplish an amazing amount if you've got the skills. You don't have to rush into it. So you can go and help your dad. Always feel like you did a contribution to your family that did a contribution to you, right? And still leave at 30 and be a kid and have plenty of time to build your own thing.
Thank you, Gary. I'll never forget that.
Thank you, brother.
Gary, it's Dave. We're closing. We actually have, from the last time you gave books, we had so many. We're going to give these out so they can, if you can still see it. This is Gary's book, 12 and a half. And it is essentially the textbook for this class, sort of the emotional skills that you need to practice. And the first and foremost is gratitude. And so thank you, Gary, for being such a great supporter of USC and for coming to my class 3 times. I can't tell you what it's done. You and Pete Carroll are probably and Brene Brown were like the building blocks of this class. And so I'm so grateful. So, but if you want to finish, because you really are putting out gratitude in immense amounts and you think that's the superpower, and tell them why it's not a soft skill and why it's just essential to having a good life. And then we're going to let you go.
If you were confused that if you're sitting in this classroom right at this second, that you were in the very small percentage of most lucky humans on earth, if you do not have the context of what the 8 billion people on earth are doing, that there was almost 1 billion people on this earth that don't have access to clean water. Like if you do not understand and have a relationship with gratitude, you have no shot of ever being happy. It is the singular skill that is a variable. When you're thankful for what you have, instead of being envious for what you don't have, it just makes you unstoppable. And it is no question one of the reasons that everything has worked in the way that it has for me and the people that I watch and admire and look up at close and founders I'm close to. And it's so easy to get caught because your sibling, quote unquote, has it better, because your neighbor has it better, because your roommate at this school has it better. Like it's so easy for you to see what other people have that's better, when in reality you are sitting in fucking outer space of like luxury. You're in fucking luxury land. You're in fucking entrepreneur class at USC. Like you're sitting in such rarefied air. I just wish you really internalized it. I really do. Like all these foofy things like gratitude and kindness and empathy. Like I get that everyone's foofy about it. I'm very aware of the culture that we all live in. I understand of like the gender war on TikTok. I understand everything. This is what I do for a living. I promise you, these soft skills in a world of AI, wait till AI comes and eats up a ton more of the IQ and the tangible and the black and white. We're only going to be left with gray And these great skills are going to be the differentiation for you to get what you want, period. And so I hope you develop them.
Please, let's thank Gary Vaynerchuk.
Hey, everybody. I just want to say thank you. Just appreciation across the board to all of you that are listening and enjoying the podcast. As a matter of fact, I want to interact a little bit more. So check out the Spotify Q&A section for all of you listening on Spotify and fire away your questions. We're going to get you into the podcast a little bit more and you will not want to miss it.